This is episode 345 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, August the 15th, 2011.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a case.
The future is here.
Like how technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love life.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McComb and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. Last Friday, Australia's telecommunications industry ombudsman released the organisation's findings into how consumers are treated by Australian phone companies. The TIO research paper titled Resilient Consumers reported on a survey of more than 500 consumers who lodged complaints with the TIO between July and August in 2010. The survey found that more than 55% of consumers surveyed reported contact with the service providers five or more times before contacting the TIO. 60% reported spending three or more hours unsuccessfully trying to resolve their issues before approaching the TIO, with one in five saying they spent more than 9 hours resolving their complaint. 50% reported contact with more than three different departments, and the most common reasons for complaining to the TIO were because there was no solution offered by the service provider or a promise to resolve a complaint was not kept. Simon Cohen, head of the TIO, said consumers who come to the TIO report spending substantial time and effort trying to resolve their complaints. They report being transferred from department to department, not being transferred to supervisors, and perhaps most frustratingly, getting no solution or a broken promise for their efforts. The report found that once these complaints were lodged with the TIO, about 90% of them were resolved when referred to the right contact within the service providers. Mr. Cohen said most of these cases should not have come to the TIO in the first place. The fact that they are most often resolved by referral by the TIO to the right department is strong evidence that consumers are being treated better. As a result, the Ombudsman has recommended introducing clearer pathways for consumers to make complaints and making sure all employees can recognise when a complaint is being made and who is the best able in their company to deal with it. So, what is the underlying reason for such complacency within the Australian telecommunications industry? Are telcos trying to cut costs by running offshore call centres and in turn alienating customers? And more importantly, is the cost saving in running an offshore point of access for consumers worth it when it comes to the company's reputation? Personally, I like someone who's local, who understands the local topography. It's part of my decision-making process when choosing a service provider. Does it matter to you?
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
China finds another 22 fake Apple stores. Games find their way to Google+. Optus has a loss. Microsoft patched 22 known issues. Adam gets all romantic about the census. And mobile phones in Australia turn 30 years old. First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio news desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, social networking is blamed for contributing to Britain's riots. Telstra records a higher-than-expected annual profit. FOI documents show that Treasury warned Kevin Rudd's government about the NBN. And the US military loses contact with a hypersonic spacecraft. Welcome to Tech Talk News. In some of the worst riots seen in Great Britain since the 1980s, gangs of hundreds of youths have destroyed buildings, set cars alight, and bashed and robbed victims in Manchester, Birmingham and inner-city suburbs of London. At least five people have been killed in the violence and more than 1,500 arrested. The UK's Prime Minister, Mr. David Cameron.
These are sickening scenes. Scenes of people looting, vandalising, thieving, robbing. Scenes of people attacking police officers and even attacking fire crews as they're trying to put out fires. This is criminality pure and simple.
But while a civil disobedience appears to have been sparked by the police shooting of a man in Tottenham on the 4th of August, social networking, and specifically the BlackBerry Messenger Network, or BBM, has come under fire for fueling the violence. BBM is a free instant messaging service that lets BlackBerry owners communicate on a one-to-one or one-to-many basis. According to Ofcom, the UK's independent communications regulator, 37% of British teenagers have a BlackBerry handset. Here, a BBC reporter asks a youth how she knows where trouble is about to start.
But how do you know where to go next, you know?
You just BlackBerry broadcast.
BBM messages are routed and encrypted through private BlackBerry servers, and users with data plans can send text messages and pictures without incurring network costs. The BlackBerry is manufactured by Research in Motion. RIM's Managing Director of Global Sales and Regional Marketing, Mr. Patrick Spence, said in a statement, "As in all markets around the world where BlackBerry is available, we cooperate with local telecommunications operators, law enforcement and regulatory officials." At least one British MP has called for RIM to suspend the BlackBerry Messenger service in an effort to stop criminals from using BBM to facilitate the violence. But RIM then found itself the subject of a hacking attack in which a message was posted on its company blog warning RIM not to release user details to police and threatening to publish illegally obtained personal details of employees to London rioters. The company last week declined to say whether it was handing over chat logs or user details to the police. Despite market volatility last week, Telstra recorded a higher-than-expected annual profit of $3.2 billion. Although earnings were down, Telstra declared a fully-franked final dividend of 14 cents, which took the final year payout to 28 cents, in line with the previous year. Telstra's CEO, Mr. David Thodey, said the company had strong growth in mobile customers, including postpaid and prepaid mobile phones, as well as mobile broadband. Here's the ABC's finance reporter, Sue Lannan, last week.
Telstra soared, and that actually helped bring back some of the losses. They jumped 5.6%, or 16 cents, to end at $2.99. So they actually had one of the best days in ages.
Telstra shares rose nearly 6% on Thursday, which added 16 cents to $2.99, driving a rebound on the Australian Stock Exchange after a massive slump early in the week caused by fears of a US recession. Telstra shares were valued at $3.05 at close of trading last week. It's been revealed that the Australian Treasury warned the federal government that the National Broadband Network would expose taxpayers to considerable financial risks. Just weeks after the NBN was announced by former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd in April 2009, the Treasury told Cabinet it would have to consider shielding the $36 billion network from private sector rivals to ensure its viability. The Treasury at the time was under the leadership of Dr. Ken Henry, who's now a special advisor to the Prime Minister. The previously secret documents came to light last week after a Freedom of Information request. But despite its concerns, Treasury also said the project could benefit customers by breaking Telstra's stranglehold in the market. A spokesman for Deputy Prime Minister Mr. Wayne Swan said the commercial viability of the NBN was proven in its business case. And the US military has lost contact with a hypersonic spacecraft. The Experimental Falcon Hypersonic Test Vehicle, or HTV-2, is designed to travel at over 20 times the speed of sound. After a successful takeoff last week from the Vandenberg Air Force Base in California, scientists lost contact with the craft about 9 minutes into the mission. The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, said a significant amount of data was collected before an anomaly caused loss of signal, and the unmanned craft probably crashed into the Pacific Ocean. Scientists hope that one day human transport aboard an HTV-2-style craft will be possible, allowing people to travel from Sydney to London in just under an hour. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Sony has been awarded the dubious Epic Fail Award at the Hackers Oscars.
Uh-oh.
And how do you find
Game
them?
Game Boy still kicking around.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, have you been limited to 150?
Yes.
I'm down to my last 150.
I'm down to my last 150.
Give me a reference number, and I'll ring you back on the number that's on my phone bill, and I'll quote that reference number.
Uh-huh.
Then Graham replied,
"Oh, this might be legit or it might not."
They're now calling saying that they are from or affiliated with Telstra or Big Pond.
Tomatoes and tomatoes and tornadoes.
D-Link's boxy box comes close to being the dream video player for your lounge room, assuming you can find something to watch.
Did it bend your mind?
It bent my mind.
You're a hard man to please at the moment, aren't you?
Well, I am. Look, though,
that's scary.
That's very scary. It's a bit awkward for me to get on because I'm a Google Apps user.
Graham, am I boring you? He's playing games while I'm talking.
It's a bit rude, isn't it?
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. We're back again in your speakers and joining me on the panel this evening. It's a bit quiet in here tonight. The mainstays of the show are here, I might say. And someone's noticeably absent, but...
I can't think who it is.
No. So well, it's a bit hard, actually.
It's just a bit quiet in here.
The other person this year hasn't made a noise just yet.
Squeak.
There you go. There she is. Anyway, yes. I'm not sure where he is. But anyway, welcome, Graham. This is Tech Talk Radio. One of our... the Rob Oakshot of Tech Talk Radio is in this evening. Graham Callaghan down the
Still
end.
Still not sure about that name, but never mind.
Aren't you? Well, the Stig of Tech Talk Radio is not there. I think he's
missing.
He's out doing something at the moment. But and of course, Lena... is here, our
Hello.
Games guru and all that sort of stuff, who is currently...
I'm a guru now.
Oh, absolutely.
Awesome.
Yes. And
a pay rise?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah. We'll double your pay.
Awesome.
How about that? You've been promoted to a guru and got
Sounds
a pay
great.
Rise. You come along and join us on the chat and all that sort of stuff. You know where it is, everybody. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. But what does bother me a little bit is, you know the gadget and the odd spot? No, not the odd spot, but the gadget from last week, Graham?
What?
You remember, it wasn't the gadget, it was the website of the week where Dr. Ron ended up with this flight thingy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was amazing.
I think he's out at an airport somewhere. He's gone. He's possessed. Can you hear him in the background?
I can hear something in the background. There's Dr. Ron.
What are you doing, Dr. Ron? Why aren't you in the studio?
Hi, guys. How are you going? After the website of the week last week, I rushed out to Melbourne Airport. I've been out here ever since. I don't know if obsessed is the right word, maybe certifiable, but I found this really cool option on the website. There's this, like a debug option. What you can do is you can, the website's flightradar24.com, and if you go Control-Alt-Delete and press F12, and you can right-click on the plane.
Wait a minute.
He's gone sick.
You can tell them what to do.
Control-Alt-Delete and F12.
Hang on a minute. There's a Jetstar flight coming in now. Hang on.
Something's a bit suspicious here.
He's gone absolutely troppo out there.
Are you a plane spotter now, Dr. Rod?
You can see it turning left now. If I told it to you, right click and go turn left. And it does it. This is awesome.
You're not one of those parked cars on the end of the runway at the local airport, are you?
A little bit.
I'm hiding in the airport terminal. I found a little corner where there's a... cleaner's got a little PowerPoint here for the vacuum cleaner. I've got my laptop and my phone charger plugged in with a little power board, and it's all good. It's okay. I probably need a shower, though. I've been out here for a week now, and it's probably starting to get a bit rude for me.
I think Wilson Parking are going to love you.
Funky's the word. Oh, I forgot about my car. Yeah, I'm going to have to think about that.
Might be better just to ban it and buy a new one, eh?
It's $29 a day out there, so what have you been out there a week? You must be into at least the hundreds by now.
Yeah, not to mention how much it's going to cost me in soap and deodorant. But anyway, that's all right. That's all part of the fun.
Well, are you going to come back next week, or are you going to still be out there?
I am starting to get hungry. I'm starting to miss my home-cooked meal, so maybe I'll come back next week.
We miss you.
I'm a mainstay. You said at the start that the mainstays were there, so who's sitting in my seat? That's what I want to know.
Not you.
Not you, yeah, exactly.
If you were a mainstay, you'd be here.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah, you got me there. I've got nothing to come back to.
Oh, dear. All right. Well, you enjoy your plane spotting out there, and hopefully you get over the junk food in the next little bit, and hopefully you'll take out another mortgage to pay for your parking when you're finished at the airport.
All right. We'll do.
Do you want me to keep this fader open for a little bit, or are you going to sit there and do more plane spotting? What are you going to do?
You can keep it open for a little bit. I've got to be careful not to, do too much with the planes, too often. Or I think they get suspicious. There were a couple of federal police officers walking around before. I think they might have been looking for me, but I was hiding under the
federales.
Yeah, the federales. Yeah, run. I was hiding under the little plastic bench here, though, so they haven't caught me yet. So it's all good.
Grab the cleaner's mop, and no one will suspect a thing.
That's what I've done, Lena. I've got the mop and bucket here, and it's good.
I'll keep your seat warm.
Thank you. That'd be awesome.
All right. Well, you stay safe out there, Doctor. There's a lot of background noise out there, so I'm just going to pull you down a little bit. So yell if you want to jump in. All right. But in the meanwhile, and keep your radio down. That's what they say in commercial radio stations, isn't it?
Yeah, it'll just confuse you, right?
Yeah. There you go. I put you back down there ever so silently. Anyway, because Dr. Ron is not in the studio this evening, the traditional little correspondence which he would normally do. It's been left to us. So I've got a few emails here on the show, and a lot of people, an exceptional large amount of people, in fact, wanted Google Plus invites.
Yes.
And I think between Dr. Ron and myself, we've been churning them out at a ferocious rate. We've still only got 150 left. So obviously...
So hang on, you had 150 last week.
Yep.
You've been handing them out like nobody's business all week.
Yep.
And now you've got how many?
150 left. Counter doesn't work.
That's really cool, isn't it?
It is cool. So, yes.
Bottomless pit.
And if you're going to send us an email and grovel for a... Some of the emails are amazing.
Some of them
groveling
are getting creative. They don't want to just be like everyone else asking for one.
Tell us where you're groveling from. We're curious to know where you're all listening from. A lot of them are Australian, but I suspect a few of them are from a bit further afield. So, anyway, I've got one here, for example. This one wasn't a... This was. Remember how we were talking about SSIDs the other night, Graham?
Yeah.
Server. What was the acronym standing for? That was for
Service Set Identifier.
Yeah, that was for your router.
It's kind of like the network name for a wireless connection, but it's a set because you can have more than one access point to the same network.
Yeah.
So that's why it's a set.
Ron is buying a T-shirt which has glows because he likes T-shirts. Lena here likes T-shirts. He's got a brand new on this evening.
I do.
But Dr. Ron's got one which, when you're in range of a Wi-Fi network...
It lights up.
It lights up, cool. Signal strength-wise, to give an indication of how strong you are. Just because he's a bit of a nerd.
Yeah, you can get some good stuff from that website. I know
that
website.
Exactly. So, anyway, what would be really good, they should go the next step with those T-shirts and actually put the SSID up on the T-shirt as well whilst you're walking around.
You'd have to have a list of all the SSIDs that are in range.
I know. Or the closest one, the strongest one.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Maybe
it
could come up in a little LCD banner on the T-shirt. And yeah, you can wash these things. There's a little lug, apparently, that goes over where the battery connects.
Oh, yeah.
So you walk around with the battery in your back pocket. And you glow at a restaurant when you're in range of a wireless network. I digress. This email came from Bill in Canberra saying, guys, love the show, never miss an episode. On the topic of SSID names, my SSID is Vegemite Toast. My friends come over, do a little network scan to jump on my Wi-Fi and have a giggle. There you go.
Fair enough.
I've got one that's a bit funny.
Have you?
Well, we did, and we changed it because we thought we were freaking our neighbours out a little
bit. What were you doing it? What were you calling it?
Theirs was Steve and Lucy. Their wireless was called Steve and Lucy. So we called ours Steve and Lucy's neighbours.
Oh.
And, yeah. I don't know. We were worried that we might freak them out, so we changed it back.
Oh, that would have been hilarious.
People get creative with it. If you walk around wondering... If you go walk the dog and look at your Wi-Fi that you can pick up on your phone or whatever along the way, all the discoverable networks, some people are very creative. And some people are disgusting.
Well, you get that
too. There should be rules.
There should be, but there aren't, and it is a lot of fun. That's why I was saying it should be on the T-shirt because it'd be hilarious.
Hilarity could ensue.
It could. The other thing I was going to say too, when Bill sent his email through, just because he lives in Canberra, which is transit, because you know Canberra's all fibre, from my understanding, isn't it? By the way, the noise you can hear in the background is Dr. Ron. He hasn't said much.
Hi there.
There he is. He's still there.
Carry on.
Yes. The other email, the other part of the email, he says here is, I have a 2 meg link in 100 gig download limit. I think that should be and a 100 gig download limit through Transact and Apex Internet. This makes me sad when my brother through Optus has a 100 meg link and 1 terabyte download in Sydney. He loves visiting him. But I thought Canberra had good speeds. I thought they were good. Anyway.
Yeah, well, they have their fibre network.
That's what I thought.
Which is obviously on because that's the Transact network he mentions. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Bill in Canberra, for that one. Also, Ray, Triple J in Cairns, who is also on the chat there this evening, I saw. Last week spoke to you about the Nintendo DS. As a father of a 6-year-old who owns a DS and a 4-year-old, I found a warning from Nintendo that the unit was unsuitable for children under 6. That was enough reason for him not to buy it. The younger children always watch over the shoulder of the older ones. Also, even if the 3D is turned on, I am sure it will be turned back on when a parent walks away. Sorry, that was if it's turned off. They turn it on. That was from Ray in... Up north in Cairns.
Oh, that's an interesting reason, isn't it? Yeah.
What do you reckon, Lenny?
I think that there's not there's a little bit of studies that have been done about whether it's bad or good or not, and I think we're erring on the side of caution by saying maybe not for under six, but I don't think that anyone's head's exploded or anything horrible's really happened.
No, just give me headaches.
Yeah, it might just be a bit of a headache, and like anything, you should probably limit screen time for the really little ones.
Yeah.
But yes. It's a judgment call.
Are there any studies done on that or anything?
Preliminary ones, I guess. Oh, yeah. It hasn't really been around long enough to do anything really decent, I think.
I think the worry is that it might interfere with the depth perception development, so that when the kid goes out and he's, riding a bicycle and in traffic and perhaps even learning to drive in a few years,
he
might have trouble judging
in traffic.
Judging distances. Well, as he grows up, he'll ride the bicycle in more and more traffic, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, we don't really know much about it, so I think it's probably all right to err on the side of caution.
To be careful, yeah. Yeah.
But it's a judgment call at the end of the day, like everything with parenting.
Yeah,
but it's interesting that even the above 6 year old, he's not going to give the 3DS to, because the younger one will inevitably watch over the shoulder and participate. Yeah.
Much to the chagrin of the older sibling, I think.
It's a bit like
it's your fault I can't have a 3DS.
It's like a My Place at the moment, where the young one can't watch the old one's television. Like, there's 3 years between them, but one's watching Harry Potter and the other one has nightmares if you watch Harry Potter.
Yep.
So we're the world's worst parents when we say to the younger one, sorry, no, out of there, you can't watch that. So anyway, that's the joys of it, really. Also in email this week, I've got a couple here. I don't know whether we'll be able to get to them all because there's so many of them. I've got another four here on the bench. One from Peter S., agree with your rant about the use of digital radios for emergency services comms, as well as the fragile infrastructure. The data payload can be fragile as well, as seen in this story. Any links to a story?
Yeah, the story
up on the show notes, Dr. One down the track.
It was about some technology similar to what we use here in the United States, where they found a way to interfere with it using a children's toy that could transmit just enough power on just the right channel to interfere with the setting up of the channel. It's not spread spectrum like a lot of things are. That actually does use a discrete channel. And if you interfere with the very start of the transmission, you can upset the data enough that it can't decode any of the transmission. So you only have to interfere with it for the
tiny
fraction of
a second. So a child's toy can do that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So,
yeah, so when was that? Not last week, the week before, wasn't it? Or, no, it would have been last week. We talked about it. If you want, you can go back on the podcast and have a bit of a listen on that. We were talking about the emergency services in this country going digital and the pros and cons thereof, because there were quite a few.
Mostly cons, yes.
Mostly cons, yeah, exactly.
The pro, of course, to put the other side, would be privacy, so that if say, in the course of an investigation or even just responding to calls, that the police would want to have people's names and people who've reported incidents and so on sent over the radio. They don't want people snooping on that for privacy reasons. So that's one of the reasons they're going digital. But there's a big downside for safety. So
I'd let them snoop for the realisation that it works. Be able to be
heard. There's that, or you could have a system where there's a secure network for passing that sort of information, perhaps a secure data network that can flash that information up on their terminals in their cars, but there's also an analog communication network as well.
Yeah. I think we also came to the conclusion last week that it may take a bit of a disaster for the powers that be to realise the limitations of the network which they are employing.
I know that for a while the ambulance service here, they would page the details to the crews, and then call them on the radio to say you've got a job to such and such, details are on your pager.
Do they still do that?
I don't know, but I know they did a while back.
Who uses a pager these days?
I honestly don't know.
Because there's still paging things out there.
Doctors? Would doctors use them?
I don't know. You'd think they'd use... Oh, hang on, there's a doctor there. What, Dr. Ron, you use a pager for your medical condition?
Someone say, Doctor, I'm here. Yeah, am I on? Have I won anything?
Oh, dear, shall I pull the fader down?
I think you'll find hospitals, there's a lot of private paging networks around, like hospitals and medical facilities, that sort of thing. So they have their own local area paging, but I don't think many people still use the wide area networks like we used to have 10 or 15 years ago.
But I think they're still all installed, aren't they? I think from a brief listen around on some of those frequencies the other day, we could still hear them up there. So someone must be still using them.
Yeah, someone must be using them. If there's any listeners that have pages and still use pages, then ping us an email and let us know what you use it for. And
why you choose to use a pager rather than a mobile phone or something like that.
Rather than a mobile phone, yeah. Because the other thing is, like, a lot of the local area networks where they
did used to use pagers, like in hospitals and so on, like they've all gone to their own cordless handsets now. You know, they've got big sort of local area network cordless phones, like DECT type phones. And I really think pagers are, you think they're a thing of the past in this day and age, you know.
I think one of the advantages of pagers in a medical environment was that they don't transmit, they're receive-only devices, whereas even if you SMS a mobile phone, it transmits an acknowledgement back. So where you're working around sensitive equipment or equipment where you really, really don't want something to go wrong and give a patient a wrong dose of a medication or something like that, it might be slightly safer. But I think a lot of those fears are gone now these days as well. So
I think a lot of those fears are gone. Medical people who are listening all know a piece of equipment called a syringe pump, and I know that early mobile phones or the analog mobile phones and GSM mobile phones used to interfere with syringe pump operation if you had the devices, the mobile phones too close to the devices. But
why? What happened? Did you get a hit or something? Did you?
No, it would change the metering and the settings in it, and it would have a noticeable effect. But
so
I think those days
would change the rate at which the drug was being delivered to the patient. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that could have ramifications, couldn't it?
But I would assume for some years now that people making that technology, making medical technology, have been aware of hardening it against that sort of interference, so that, you know, even if you do use a mobile phone right beside it, it's been tested to not be affected by that sort of interference.
Oh, look, you'd think so and you'd hope so in this day and age, yeah.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Ron. By the way, you're online at the moment. Why aren't you in the chat?
I'm too busy. I'm landing planes. There's a Virgin one here. I'm trying to...
Okay, we'll just pull him down. He's off. He goes again there. Anyway.
I'm going to sign off because I'm getting some very strange looks from some security guards here. So I'll catch you all next week.
Righto. Yes. Keep your head down and hopefully get out of the car park okay.
Don't get locked up.
Thank you, Dr. Ron. See you next week.
Bye.
Oh, dearie me.
I hope he knows his rights.
The good doctor out there at the airport, he's gone absolutely berserk with last week's gadget of the... Not gadget, the website of the week.
The website and the app of the week,
which was the aviation monitoring aviation.
I think he might have been pulling
time.
Our legs a bit there for some of that. So
what?
No, not
no
Dr.
Way.
Ron.
He would never lie to me. Never. Well, yeah, maybe a little bit.
Maybe a little bit.
A lot.
Maybe you'll stretch the truth a little bit. And just one more, because we're really running out of time. From Dale, just listening to an intro for one of the eps we did a while back where the space shuttle landed.
Oh,
and,
yes.
Yes, on the pod. And mention is made of the space shuttle plunging through the atmosphere at Mach 25, reaching temperatures of 137 degrees Celsius. And he corrected us and said you might find it closer to 1600 degrees Celsius.
That probably does sound more
happy
plausible,
smile,
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so there you go. That's a bit of correspondence. There's a few more here from some of our other regulars here. But
mostly asking for Google Plus invites.
Yeah, and traditionally they're an essay and a half long, and I haven't read them all properly. So. Anyway, you know who you are.
Somebody sent us one saying here's a great little program he uses on a daily basis and didn't seem to attach any sort of program. So I don't know what that
was. Oh, who was that?
About.
Gary? Gigi,
I didn't. I don't want to. Should I stop him in?
No, probably not.
No.
I don't know who they are.
Yeah.
I'll know who
if you send an email like that, send us what the actual program was.
Yeah, and also tell us where you're emailing from. It's always nice to know which part of this wonderful brown planet you're on.
Yeah, it is great. Yeah.
All right, this is Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Now, during the course of the week, Anonymous, the hacking group.
Oh, yes.
The people that have... there was... What was the other one called? LulzSec.
Yes.
Wasn't it?
They've disbanded.
LulzSec. They've disbanded, but anyway, Anonymous are trying to regain the throne here of being the most disruptive hacking group around, and they've targeted Facebook on November the 5th. This is according to a post on YouTube, which got an amazing amount of...
Well, they've said they're going to, yeah. Yeah.
Amazing amount of
remember,
hits.
Remember the 5th of November.
Yeah, which is Guy Fawkes Night in the United States, apparently.
Everywhere. The UK and...
Really?
It used to be here.
Yeah, we're the nanny country. We're not allowed to have fireworks anymore, are we?
No, not this state anyway.
So, yes. But anyway, this is quite an interesting video that popped up. It started off with a bit of canned video from one of those, you know, canned video supplying companies. Then it was a pixelated image of a man wearing a suit and a torso with a digitally altered voice saying that you will like what we do, you'll look back in history and say this is good. Now, they've got an issue over privacy with Facebook, and they're taking it upon themselves to actually take down Facebook on this particular day. Now, in what way and what how they're going to do it is yet to be seen, but apparently November 5 is a day of reckoning, according to the hacking group Anonymous.
Why would they give them that much warning if they wanted to? If they really wanted to take them down, wouldn't giving them
because it's
3 months warning?
It's part of the
funnier,
show.
It's funnier if you warn them and they still can't keep them out.
That's true, yeah.
And it's Facebook. It's the biggest social networking site on the planet.
They're sort of biting their thumb at them, aren't they?
Now, Graham, this traditionally they would use a DDoS attack, a distributed denial of service attack, which
it depends what their aim is, yeah.
Which utilizes potentially zombies, you know, because viruses and things like that these days are stealth things. They sit on computers and lay dormant until groups like Anonymous and hackers in particular, if they're not capturing your keystrokes, they use it for a DDoS attack on a particular company. So what do you reckon? Is that a feasable option for an organization
That's one thing they might do. That won't get inside Facebook's networks in any way. It won't get in and allow them to access any private data or any passwords or user lists or anything like that. A denial of service attack is simply that they
taking them off air, isn't it?
They just prevent other people from being able to use it,
and they do that by swamping
the thing with nonsense requests. Yeah,
someone
that take the web servers so much time to respond to that they don't have the resources to respond to legitimate queries.
Someone on my Facebook today said that Anonymous have said they're going to stop using low orbit ion cannon for DDoS and start using their own developed RefRef tool. Don't know what any of this means.
No,
that is... Took down Pastebin in 17 seconds, causing about 48 minutes of downtime.
I think they're...
There we go. There we go. No idea what she's talking about.
Yay, my first Nerd Alert.
I think that's her first Nerd Alert.
It is. Attacks the server from the inside using JavaScript and SQL. It can be compared to giving a large beast a simple carrot and then watching the beast choke itself to death.
So, the first couple of things you mentioned were known... What's called botnets, known networks of compromised computers that can be used in what Andrew's talking about, a denial of service attack. The later method you're talking about are a more intrusive method of actually getting in and disrupting the activities of the servers more directly.
Ooh.
So, as I say, there's various different methods they could use, depending on what their aims are. If their aim is to get in and to prove that the networks aren't secure, they can get in and get secret users' data like the attacks on Sony did, then they would use different methods to if they just want to disrupt access to the site. Mm. So there's a whole range of different tools they could use.
So November the 5th is going to be an interesting day. A month or two off yet? Mm. What are we up to? End of August, aren't we? So September, October, November. Yeah, so two and a bit months away. So, but as you say, Lena, good question. Why are they giving so much notice?
Yeah.
Probably to draw attention to themselves and the extra publicity that will otherwise... It'll be a bit like a tsunami warning, really, won't it? Will it eventuate?
Yeah.
And will it be a trickle? Will it be a massive surge?
Don't go down to the beach to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also note that there are some reports that within the Anonymous group themselves that there's some debate over whether this is a good idea or not, and so some parts of the organisation might be in favour of it and other parts against it, so it may not be a done deal as yet.
Mm. All right.
Of course, they're not a formal organisation, so those members of Anonymous who want to do it might go ahead and do it all by themselves anyway. So,
well, if they've got the keys to the palace and they can ramp, get the botnets going, then why wouldn't they?
Mm.
All right, wait and see on that one. In other stories, you remember last week or even the week before, it might have been, we were talking about Apple, the fake Apple stores in China?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, apparently Chinese authorities have found another 22
wow.
masquerading as
fake Apple stores.
With the boys in the blue t-shirts and little...
And girls.
The only photos I saw were pretty much boys. But, yeah, you could be right. There could be some girls there. But, yes, these are just the way things happen in China to a little bit. Now, anyway, what was really interesting is that they've stayed there, but they've just renamed themselves. You know, the Apple logo's come down. The Chinese authorities have made the Apple logos come down.
What
and they've put up signs now that says something like gadget store.
Oh, Something, I was hoping it'd be like Mapple.
Something ubiquitous, which doesn't... Yeah, could be. Yeah. Something ubiquitous like
that. They
sell
my phones and my pods.
Yes. That's the sort of response I'd expect in China. They're not going to disappear from the business just because of a bit of a setback over intellectual property. They're going to find a way to keep trading.
Well, yeah. The Chinese Administration for Industry and Commerce in the Yuan province capital said the stores have been ordered to stop using Apple's logo after Apple China accused them of unfair competition and violating its registered trademark. So if that does it, the local competition are complaining about it. Local Apple, they're not really Apple, you know, you've got to stop this. But nonetheless, I wonder if it would have been any different if it was external voices saying, can you please stop this, rather than internal voices saying, this isn't fair. Do you think? No?
I don't know.
I really don't
know.
Okay.
I don't know much about companies muscling in on other companies and all that.
All right. It's just see, China is the place to have things copied.
Yes.
It's what happens over there. It's part of their culture.
Have you seen all the fake iPads? Some of them, it'd be really hard
to
tell the
difference. They're probably available at those
shops. Yeah.
And they're probably a lot cheaper than the other.
Actually, the reports I heard was that the fake Apple stores were selling genuine Apple products. It was only the store that was fake, not the products.
Oh.
So they were selling real products, but it was a fake store.
Yeah.
Gee whiz.
That was the version I heard anyway.
That's a worry, isn't it? You walk in, make an appointment with the Genius Bar, and
someone works at Foxconn, and they've been sneaking a few cartons out the back door.
Probably.
When the media are interviewing the customers and saying, are you bothered that you're buying this not from Apple? They said, no, they weren't bothered. I wanted an iPhone. I've got an iPhone. It's still a genuine iPhone. Mm. Just because I didn't buy it from an Apple store, I'd bought it from these people. It doesn't matter.
But yeah.
Most people weren't bothered by it. Most customers weren't bothered by it.
I'd be wary about whether it was a real iPhone or not, though, because the fakes are really good. Some of them.
If it works,
the new one's coming out shortly. They're ramping up production. I think I read something on Mac Rumors today about it. So we'll wait and see for that. I'd like to talk about electricity. Do you use it?
Yes.
Yeah, I do too.
I am right now, as we speak.
Yes. Even probably generating some of your own aura around you. In news today, it seems that energy demand has finally peaked, and we're actually not as demanding in energy to power our gadgets. Despite the fact that we're now more gadget-centric than we ever have been.
Yeah, because our power bills have been skyrocketing and we can't afford to pay them. We can't afford to turn on the air conditioner or the...
And this is the point I was about to make.
Or the electric fire or... yeah.
Electric fire. And next it'll come down to whether or not you have a coffee or a group coffee.
Right? That's right.
We'll do a whip around. Only for 6 cups will we turn the kettle on.
That's right.
Yeah. We'll go to gas instead, potentially. Anyway, despite vain attempts by my wife at turning off the microwave oven clock every night at around about 9 o'clock, we've still managed to actually...
I can't stand that when the microwave clock's not on.
No. Well, you know, she moved into sacred territory, and this will get back. She moved into sacred territory the other day, and for the first time in her life, she turned the clock radio off on my side of the bed.
Oh! Them's fighting words.
I said to her, do you expect me to turn it on and set the clock every night? She said, you can use mine. I said, no, thank you. Oh, dear.
Whoa. We've got a prehistoric microwave. We've got a Stone Age microwave at home. We've had it for 100 years.
Yeah.
And it's the most sensitive clock in the world. If you have the tiniest blip, the tiniest little flicker of power, the clock goes off on it.
Really?
And it's the one thing you can rely on. You know, every other clock in the house will be right, but that microwave will be flashing 12.
Okay. I could tell you another funny story. I'll probably get into trouble for airing the laundry. We have a double oven at home, which is just an oven with two sort of spots to cook your food.
Awesome.
Anyway, she tried turning it off at the circuit breaker at the wall. Don't ask me why. Just don't ask questions, all right? But the funny part about it is if the clock's not set, the lower double oven doesn't work.
Right.
It needs a clock to be set. So should I say more? The weeks that ensued about, why doesn't the oven work anymore? I said, did you turn it off?
Have you actually done the calculation? Have you measured how much current it uses when it's in standby mode and worked out how many cents per year you're saving by turning it off at the circuit breaker?
No, I haven't, purely because of the sake that the extra lights that get left on around the house, you know, the 100 and, you know, that all those little 50-watt little downlighty things.
Yeah.
When there's no people in rooms, you know, I find that
well, A, that's going to swamp it.
Correct.
No, yeah, so there's really not very much point. And you've probably gone around, probably a lot of your lights you've replaced with the low-energy, fancy, fluorescent, annoying ones that take half an hour to warm up.
Yeah, we've got one of those. That's the kiddie light
really
at
hate
night.
Those. We've got one of those in the dining room, but you've got to turn it on 20 minutes before you want to go in there.
Yeah, it's
otherwise,
warm
it's
up.
Gloomy.
It's like the street lights.
They hurt my eyes.
Do they?
Yeah.
But like they're forcing us to use them now. And yet, do you realise that none of that makes... that you know, absolutely swamped by the amount of electricity you're wasting if you've got old seals on your fridge. If you go and fix the seals on your fridge, you know, get them renewed and make sure they're all right, then you're going to save more power than you're going to save doing any of these other things.
Excellent. Mm. I'll tell her that. That'll be good. That'll be the next
the next
job for the weekend.
Turning off something that's running a clock is, yeah.
Can you say that again, please? I'll record it and I'm going to play that back as a ringtone.
Don't get involved, Graham. Don't get involved.
The other thing,
they're
too.
Dragons.
The other thing, too, on the plus side of it, like, you know, she means well.
I know she does.
On the plus side of it, and I think everyone who does do this means well. Mm. The thing
you've
is. You've
got to think about it rationally, that's all.
You do. Yeah, there are some appliances in the house, such as the toaster and the kettle.
Yep.
It doesn't matter where you turn them off. You can be turned off at the wall, or it can be turned. The device could not be on. It's not using any electricity.
That's right.
And they can be. You don't have to turn them off at the wall.
No.
And then there are some appliances which it's really good to turn off at the wall.
Like the coffee machine, because it constantly heats the water when it's on standby.
Well, mine doesn't, but
mine
yes.
Does
it? Okay, yep. Well, yours is good
I
to turn off.
At the
yeah.
Wall.
The other one which we do at our place is we have, and this is credit to my wife, we actually have a power board plugged into our entertainment system, which is by a switch on the wall, which is easily accessible on the way to the bedroom at night. So when you finish watching telly, you'd hit the one big switch.
And everything off.
It gets rid of the TV, the remote on that. It gets rid of all the DVD players, the Blu-ray, all those gadgety things that live in there, routers and stuff like that.
My brother-in-law did that when he went on holiday. And then he came home and wondered why Foxtel like you hadn't recorded all these shows.
We should move on.
If you want to turn them off to save it, just remember that they're off.
Some of them might be doing things for you, yes.
Mm. All right, well, there you go. Anyway, that was Ausgrid, which provides power to much of New South Wales, has announced the demand for its electricity by regular householders fell 2% for each of the past 4 years. There you
go. That's impressive.
Well done, New South Wales. Wonder if any of the other states can take... We're colder down here. We've probably excelled and, you know... But then again, you also look at the power pricing. I think New South Wales and Victoria are the two states with the biggest price rises in electricity.
Mm.
Maybe there's method to their madness there.
Yes.
Speaking of other things, the TIO came out. I opened up the show with it this evening. The TIO had a bit of a survey. I've got it here, actually. It's a lovely big 16 or 18-page document. It's called Resilient Consumers Report. Are you resilient?
I'd like to think so.
Thick-skinned, maybe, should also be the word. Incredibly patient is another word that, or another two words that comes to mind with people that like hanging on hold for telecommunications.
The amount of time people spend trying to resolve complaints is what you're referring to,
yes.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, yes. And our telcos are notorious. I don't know whether it compares to any of the other ones around the world, but ours are traditionally fairly, you know, complacent when it comes to customer service. So Telstra's on the mends these days. I think they're bringing their call centres back. And I heard a radio ad for them the other night too.
Your call is important to us. Please wait on hold another 4 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that one. But did you know that Telstra are now opening? Yeah, they closed off all their 24-hour.
You are 4,379th in the queue.
I'll never get this out of this.
Your call
rate.
Is important to us. Not that important that I'll answer it.
One of the issues that they've now gone 24 hours, which is good, which means you can ring up. There's an ad doing the rounds saying you can get help and book your services now.
That is
around
good.
The clock again. They used to do
they
that.
They used to, yeah.
Then they stopped it. Next, they'll bring back the talking clock. Well, that's probably still there, really. It's just buried on a different phone number.
Well, the talking clock is still there. And it's still on the same phone number, I think.
Yeah.
But it's not what it used to be. It used to be physically attached to the atomic clocks down at Telecom, but I think they've now privatised it and it's now taking its source from GPS now.
Oh, that'd be
so,
right. It's gone high-tech.
Well, no, low-tech I'd call that compared with actually being part of the atomic clocks.
Okay. How do atomic clocks
part of the official
sync?
Time standard.
Do they have like a Genlock or something
Adams.
Like that?
Yes.
Thank you. Which ones?
Cesium.
Smarty pants.
No,
cesium.
Know.
There you
yes.
go.
So it counts the vibrations of a cesium atom. It's not synced. It's the source. It's the gold standard.
All right. So if you're a resilient consumer, chances are you spend a fair bit of time on hold to some of the telcos. The biggest issue was, or the biggest problem, should I say, was the fact that telcos would promise something and they wouldn't deliver it, or they just ended up not being able to resolve an issue, which then those customers would go to the TIO. The TIO would then act on their behalf and it would be resolved. 90% of the cases were then resolved pretty much.
That was the fascinating figure that, yeah, people would go to the telecommunications organisation. They'd be bounced from department to department. A large percentage of people said they talked to at least three different departments. Yet when they went to the TIO, and the TIO was able to say, no, you need to talk to this person at such and such a telecommunications provider, then the problem was instantly resolved. So that means that the telecommunications organisations, and I'm talking to Optus and Telstra and Vodafone and all those people, should, if they could train their people internally to pass on complaints, recognise complaints and pass them on to the right people first time, then they could save all of these referrals to the TIO.
So is it just because they're too big and it's not because of the tyranny of distance? Because I alluded to in the opener as well as having offshore call centres calls.
The left middle finger doesn't know what the left index finger's doing.
Yeah, yeah. And those people, and the reason why I say offshore, it's to do with the fact that, you know, if something happens with Telstra or Vodafone or Optus and it's in the mainstream news, people hear about it in Australia. But over in other offshore call centres, they may be oblivious to what's going on and they're just towing their company line who is offering company support to other telecommunications companies here.
As long as they're properly trained and have the information they need and can be understood and can speak English, then I don't care where the call centre is. It doesn't matter if it's in India or somewhere else, as long as they have the information they need and they can resolve the problems.
Okay.
It doesn't really matter.
See, I like a local call centre.
Oh, yes, it's nice.
It's nice to be able, and I must admit, most of the dealings I've had with my telco of choice of recent days has been local, which has been great. And they've been able to resolve issues or fix things or add things just like that, which has been terrific.
It's interesting, in the UK, all the UK companies, they locate their call centres in Scotland. Because
that's offshore, isn't it?
Well, no.
Oh, okay. No. They all speak with a funny accent up there.
But the thing is that
Northern.
The milder form of the Scottish accent is a very pleasant accent to listen to and is very considered trustworthy by consumers. So they've made the choice to locate their call centres in an area where the accent is, you know, a trusted accent and an easily understood accent and a pleasant one to listen to.
Okay.
Wow.
There's some good comedy sketches around about those sort of things, but obviously it works.
Yeah, I wonder where in Australia you would find a sort of a trustworthy, sort of pleasant-sounding accent to listen to.
Adelaide.
Yeah,
Adelaide?
I was about to say, South Australian accent's pretty good.
They say dance. It's very soft.
I've got to be careful what I say here. Hi, Adelaide listeners. They all listen to...
Yeah, I think Adelaide.
Fair enough. Dr. Or maybe New Zealand, and we can have a little giggle about their pronunciation when they say six.
Yeah, you could always ring up and say, how many do I get?
Yeah, exactly.
What's half a dozen? Yeah.
I went to uni in New Zealand. They get over it real quick. Do they? What comes after five?
I remember when the Chaser boys asked those very questions to a New Zealand Prime Minister just recently. It was very funny. Well, recently, a couple of years back. All right. In other news too, just briefly before we go to a break, and we're going to have Adam Turner. He's going to reminisce about the census. Remember the census? Did you do yours online?
Oh, I did, yes.
Lena?
No, I did
you
mine
haven't
on
done
paper.
It?
I have
did
done
paper.
It, but I did it on paper.
Why did you do it on paper?
It was there. I had a pen. Seemed easy.
No, but you had a choice. When the person came to the door and said online or offline, you went at the offline option.
Yeah.
Have they collected it yet?
No. Do they collect it or I have to post it? Because I have no
idea.
No, they come around and collect it.
Okay. No, it's still sitting there.
They left a note on the bit of paper saying, on the yellow thing, saying
when
they're coming back.
Okay.
Go and have a look at that.
I will.
But I did mine online.
It was good, wasn't it?
Now, I intentionally chose to do mine online.
Yeah.
And I gathered all my family, well, people I live with and family members around.
Really?
And
I just did it all for everyone.
But I intentionally started at just after 7:30 in the evening, right in the peak period, right when they said not to do it. They said, don't do it between 7 and 9. That's
rebel.
When everybody will do it.
Rebel.
And that's why it worked for you, because no one did it then.
Well, it worked really, really well.
I did mind about
fast,
that time.
It was efficient. The thing was beautifully well designed.
No timeouts?
No timeouts, no problems.
Because didn't something like 650,000 people forgot to press submit at the end when they did it online? Was that a design fault, a user interface problem, or was that just people being a bit...
Where did you hear that statistic?
I heard something about that afterwards, and I'm a bit baffled by it. Because
I'm a bit baffled because
a big button?
You would think it would keep its work in progress, because you could log out and come back in again at any stage, so maybe it just kept your answers.
Yeah, perhaps they just need to reconnect and press send.
Well, maybe someone's put at the census people have put a bot in to go around and click submit for everybody who's completed all the questions.
But you know, it was a fairly obvious. I
that's
didn't...
a fairly hefty chunk of people.
I'm looking forward to when we vote online. I think that's going to be good.
here is your coupon.
I think that's a bigger problem. Yeah. I think that's a much bigger problem.
Certainly opens itself up to shonkiness, doesn't it?
Well, so does writing it in pencil. Why don't we have pens when we vote? I've never understood that. All our voting is done in pencils. That drives me nuts. I want it in pen.
I have no answer for that one.
No,
you've left me speechless. And Graham, by the looks of it.
One good thing about the census thing was when you went to the system requirements, it talked about you need a web browser that can do JavaScript and can do 128-bit SSL security and didn't mention specific browsers by name. So they weren't forcing you towards using, say, Internet Explorer like a lot of companies do. Mm. It actually worked on any browser that met basic specifications. So I completed the census quite happily using Chrome all the way through.
I did too.
So, yeah.
Adam Turner didn't.
Didn't he?
No, he didn't.
He's like Lena.
He jumped into Lena's camp and decided to get out the crayon.
It's a little bit retro, isn't it?
Sit around the 1970s kitchen table there with crayon and coffee in hand. Young children and a wife, and obviously did this.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
When it's time to stand up and be counted, I prefer to do it the old-fashioned way. Once every 5 years, census workers cross Australia to deliver the forms so we can take stock as a nation and plan for our future. This year, plenty of people filled out the census form online. But to me, some things are too important to be done on a screen. They deserve the sense of occasion associated with holding a piece of paper. From a marriage license to a birth certificate, from a diploma to a mortgage, pieces of paper still mark the milestones in our lives. As a nerd with a thing for numbers, there's naturally a sense of excitement in my household come census night. It also appeals to my sense of tradition, as it's the 100th anniversary of the nation's first census. There's also a feeling of participating in something that's bigger and more important than our day-to-day lives. Similar to an election night, although thankfully less controversial. This census was extra special in my house because we have a new name to add to the family tree. Miss 5, who was still Miss 4 on census night, missed out on the last census by just a few days. I'm still disappointed that my heavily pregnant wife wouldn't ride on a donkey back to my parents' house to be counted in the last census. Anyway, filling out the census is something special in my house. We sit around the dinner table on census night and fill out every question together, discussing each aspect of it. And the children provide the answers they know. Some questions are also good for a laugh, especially when you work from home. Unfortunately, stagger wasn't an option for how you commute to your workplace. I don't want to fill out such an important, historic and personal document on an impersonal slab of glass. I want to hold it in my hand and know that it's part of history. By the census's 200th anniversary, I'm sure we'll all fill it out electronically and paper forms will be relegated to museum displays. But I intend to hold out for as long as possible. Filling out the census around the dinner table as we break bread on that special night is an occasion which calls for old-fashioned paper and ink.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
How often do we have them? Are they every 5 years or something?
5 years, yeah.
So the next one's 2016.
That's right.
There were some pretty dumb questions on there, wasn't there? I thought, you've got the opportunity to survey the nation. Why don't you ask some good questions like, how many hours ironing a week do you do?
Why is that a good question?
That's what I thought.
Oh, I thought you said that's one you wanted it to be.
No, but why didn't they
the
say...
The housework question.
Yeah, you well, look that, at, that is the government you... spending their $43 billion wisely on NBN, yes or no?
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
But why didn't they ask those sort of questions?
But then you have to educate everyone about what the NBN is.
But no. Yeah. Well, yes.
Informed consent and all that. Yeah.
I just thought
it's
that if...
It's an interesting problem from a statistics point of view to design a questionnaire that everybody's going to be able to answer to get...
Maybe they have optional parts to the census.
To get the most useful data without... Well, optional would be pointless
it
because...
It would, wouldn't it?
Yeah. There's a reason it's compulsory. There's a reason that you've got that everybody fills in, because if you only have some people fill it in, then you'll get a bias just by the fact that certain types of people will choose to fill it in and certain other types won't. So they'll be heavily biased results.
I think the housework questions are pretty valid, actually. Division of labour is a fascinating topic.
A lot of eye-openers. I think blokes probably worked out how little they did. Some mums realised just how much they did.
So that's the thing. Or maybe it's starting to get a bit more even than 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You never know.
I think that might be one of the trends they're watching because, of course, compared to not 5 years ago, but compared to decades ago, you've got more and more people where both partners are working. So that's bound to impact the amount of work that people are doing at home.
Exactly. Maybe the kids are getting messier. Maybe them better. There is a dishwasher. Put it in there. Time for a drink of water, I think. Back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Google has opted out of Germany now.
But that's not the whole problem.
Lino, help us. You need to come back. All is forgiven.
Yeah, what do you want? I can't deal with this now.
Absolutely.
That's very wrong.
It was very rude.
And obviously pretty good on the batteries too.
Not happy, Jan.
Oh, well.
You have nothing here which does not have an Apple on it.
That's the way I like it.
Couldn't even tell whether you were male or female.
No. Frankly, no.
Have you worked out the five-finger fondle yet?
I hate toolbars on browsers.
Yes.
That really drives me insane.
Yes.
That lacks couth uncouth as well.
That lacks complete couth.
Graham took umbrage during the week with a ranking system that I developed on the forum.
Should have known that was coming.
A good cabler is worth their weight in gold.
Absolutely.
Mm. Let's talk about Apple, shall we?
Yay.
Oh, Apple scandal.
Yeah. That's when I got out. They pulled me back in.
Entertaining.
They post some lolcats.
No, they haven't posted any lolcats yet that I've seen.
Informative.
At some point, litigation must come to an end.
Exactly.
Independent.
I'm not queuing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Google Plus.
Yes.
I know. Oh, gee.
Oh,
whiz.
Wow.
I'm deaf in both ears now.
Sorry about that. Google Plus.
Google Plus. We've been giving away, not that we're running a competition or anything, but just everyone seems to like emailing us saying, can I have an invite to G Plus?
Everybody wants to play with
it. It's really good. It's up to 6 weeks down, 25 million users.
Yeah, don't bother if you're a Google Apps user because then I won't let you on yet.
Still?
No.
Because you talked about that last week.
Yeah.
They're still not going to let you on. Do you have to go get another account?
I can, but then I've got to sign out of everything I've signed into on the website. And they've just gone through the whole process of linking them all together. And, yeah, so now it's even harder to be signed in as a normal Gmail account as well as my Google Plus account.
I think you can have, and this is according to one of the emails I got from a listener during the week, you can actually have a Google Plus account without having a Gmail account, I think.
Yeah, you can.
Someone will correct me, I'm sure.
Yeah, because you've just got to have a Google profile,
okay,
which can be linked to any email account.
Oh, so you've got to have a Google profile. So long as you've got a profile, you can have a G Plus account.
And you can link a Google profile to any email account in the world, except a Google Apps email.
Really?
Yeah. Seriously.
Get another domain, Graham. Just get the .net version of the .com version.
But I need my Google Apps things to do my work.
Yeah, but just get, you've got .com.au. Get the .net.au version and bung that in as you...
I have, but I can't be signed in as both at the same time.
Mm. Oh, that's true, isn't it?
That's the problem.
Oh, yeah,
I've got another Gmail account, but it's just too frustrating to keep swapping and using and logging out as one and in as the other.
Well, here's something that you're missing out on. They've put games in there now. Like in Facebook, you can play little games and stuff like that. This is on the Google blog that, yes, you can now find things like Diamond Dash of all things. Have you played any of these games? Lena says she who's nodding them.
No, I haven't.
I haven't really jumped into Google Plus yet. I'm still standing back watching all the cool kids playing.
No, we've noticed actually.
And I still don't really understand what it's all about. I haven't circled everyone.
Oh, you don't have any circles of friends there.
I have circles of friends.
Well, how come you're not using them?
I just don't know what to do with them.
Communicate.
And what
be sociable.
One do with friends? I do not understand.
Oh, dear.
No, I have to really get into it and
it explains
manage it.
A lot of your tweets, actually, doesn't it?
Hey.
Well, you started.
She's a gamer. She doesn't understand the concept of real people.
Oh,
ow! My feelings!
Oh,
ow. Right there.
Oh, dear.
Straight to the burns unit.
Nothing wrong with games. You were playing games and being completely rude when
being inspired. She'd inspired me to play games.
You're inspiring me to turn my chair around this way not look at you.
Oh,
that's
dear.
That's what you're doing.
Anyway, so I thought a gamer such as yourself might have had a look at the games and what's on offering. They're just little, you know, trinket type sort of things.
Yeah, like Facebook games.
It's just a sales pitch, really, to get you to come in and have a bit of a play, I guess, really, isn't it?
Hmm.
All righty. Let's move
on. I'll have a look before next week. How's that?
Okay. That'd be good.
I'll check out the games.
Yeah. In other news,
Andrew will send you an invite.
I'm on Google Plus. She's there already. I haven't managed it properly.
You can tell how old it is too, because I think she's three avatars back from what's currently doing the rounds on Facebook and Twitter.
I see.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, so you can sort of keep a bit of a tabs onto what she's up to and all that sort of stuff. Anyway, you should pay more attention there. It's a lot of fun, a lot of videos there. It's quite a nice GUI. We've been, having a bit of good fun up there.
You can put GIFs on there, can't you? Because you can't
do
that on Facebook.
A nice GUI?
Yeah, a graphical user interface.
Ah. What do you mean it's nice and easy to use?
It is. It is. And I must admit, I'm a bit of a happy snapper when it comes to my phone. And it makes life really... It's got a really great way of showing photos.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're carefree and footloose and fancy free and you like uploading all your phone, because you can actually in the Google, in the Plus app on your Google phone, you can say, just upload everything when I take the photos.
No, thank you.
Which I've done. And it's great. It sits there. No one can see them, allegedly.
Yeah. Nah.
And it just makes it very easy to post them up online and annoy your friends.
I love annoying my friends.
Well, you love this. This is really good. So, but what else was I going to say? Oh, yes, Warlock, who I think is in our chat this evening. Yeah, there he is. I can see his name on the side of the screen. He was, I was reading one of his posts that Google Plus like real names. There were a lot of people there in one of his posts referring to the Batman characters. And they were removed. Their accounts were removed, I think, from the Google Plus thing. So, I don't know how Dr. Ron's going to go up there.
they like you to be over 18 as well, don't they?
I don't know. Do they?
I think they do, yeah.
I haven't read the terms. Do you read terms and conditions?
No. Who does? No one does.
I don't know.
Lawyers do.
I was snooping around on, because I have two Apple accounts, mm-hmm. one in the United States and one here. And the one in the United States changed the other day. And I just so by happen, rather than go click, 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 yeah, yeah, I said, page 1 of 25 in the terms and conditions. Am I really selling my soul to the Steve Jobs devil?
No.
What's the point
everything
of having...
Everything has that.
Does it?
Yes. Everything mm-hmm. has million
pages. Are they just covering
pages,
their backside so that they don't get litigious issues?
Everything's got terms and services like that.
Oh, but that's ridiculous. What's wrong with plain speak terms and services? Terms of service.
It's a legal thing, so it's not ever
Who's
going to be in plain speak. It's a legal document.
Really?
Yes.
Know. Do you feel like talking a bit more about games?
Yes.
I'll play this.
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
Some sad games news today, actually.
Aww.
I'm dancing and getting all excited about my theme, but it's not been a great week in games.
Really?
In Australia.
What's happened?
THQ, which is a large publisher, have shut down all of their studios in Australia. They had one in Brisbane and one in Melbourne. They had THQ Studio Australia up in Brisbane, and they had Blue Tongue Entertainment down here in Melbourne.
Would it be something to do with the Australian dollar by chance?
Yes. Yeah. They're foreign-owned, so any publisher that's foreign-owned tends to not like our strong Australian dollar.
No, it's going back up again too after the shenanigans of last week.
A lot of them get paid in US dollars as well, so ow. Yeah. It's
They've got to be paid in US dollars, my goodness.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're late.
So it would have been a good deal once.
Yeah.
It would have been.
Probably about 2 years ago. It would have been stunning. Yeah. Well, when I went to the States 2 years ago, it was 93 cents.
Mm.
Yeah.
So the latest sales figures and the share price has gone down, and they decided to cut off all Australian contingents. They were quite a large studio. Both of those studios were quite large. There's a lot of people without jobs now, unfortunately.
No good.
But Firemint.
How many do you know? Are we talking?
About 100, I think.
Oh, okay. That's
something
enough.
Something like that. Oh, probably more than that. Both combined are probably a bit more than that.
That's how many people lost their jobs or are about to lose their jobs at Channel 10.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Oh, that's not cool. All these people out of work, not good at all. Firemint, who made Flight Control, who just got taken over by EA a little while ago, they have said they'll reach out to ex-THQ employees and try and take as many of them on that they can.
That makes sense.
Which is
if they're in the same
really
industry.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, which is really, really nice of them. They didn't have to do that.
That's good.
What
sort of games are THQ responsible for?
They've done Avatar The Last Airbender. That was the.
What was it done here, or was it done?
Australia.
Oh yeah, really?
Yep, up in Brisbane. They did two Megamind games. Blue Tongue down here in Melbourne did De Blob and De Blob 2, which were actually really good games, and Marvel Superhero Squad. So they do a lot of things with IP from movies, and they did a Jurassic Park game in 2003, I think.
Well, there's always going to be a market for that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so that it's... Well, you'd think.
Someone's thrown a gauntlet out there in the chat, if I can interrupt so much.
Oh, yeah. My internet's gone off, so I can't read it.
Who's Shaquet? Shaquette?
I have no idea.
She says, Andy B, I'd like to see you beat Lena in any game of your choice.
Ooh.
To which she's followed up with, besides GTA, that's a total boys game.
Oh, you were doing so well.
Maybe we should do something off mic during the course of the week and get back. But anyway, I thought Perhaps. That was quite a good gauntlet. But yeah.
It was, and then it all went horribly wrong with the boys game.
What's wrong with GTA? I don't think it's a boys game.
There's no such thing as a boys game.
No.
Games are for everyone.
GTA is Grand Theft Auto.
Yep. It is very aggressive. I'll give you that.
So it's an adult game.
It is an adult game, not necessarily a boys game.
How are we going with the ratings, the censorship ratings, that is? Any news?
Yeah, it's plodding along.
Yeah?
Slowly but surely.
We're going to see it in some time in the not too distant?
I think we are. I'm not sure exactly when we're going to see it in full flight. But there was an interesting thing I read today about, I haven't brought it up, still got no internet, that the classification for online games might start to change. Because at the moment...
You mean the process?
Apple Store, sort of like the Apple Store... doesn't need games on iOS don't need to be rated by our classification board.
Games on iOS, the Apple Store.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of a self-regulating body. But
so
we
so
can't
those
get,
games are subject to US censorship classifications, is that right?
No, Apple's own judgment, I think.
Aren't they luring to their own now?
I don't know.
I think you're saying that they are.
A little bit, yeah. But they're doing an all right job of it. Not much really horrible stuff gets through. If it does, it gets taken down pretty quickly afterwards. But the Xbox Live Arcade, in other countries, they have an indie games room or an indie games arcade where a lot of indie developers get to put up their small games on the Xbox Live Arcade. We don't get to do that because the government turns around and says, well, we have to classify each game individually, and the indies can't afford to get their game classified. So... we don't get the indie games arcade here on the Xbox.
Classification, from my experience with it, isn't too dear from a film point of view. Is it dearer for video games, is it?
Well, if you're an indie making a game in your backyard, it's going to hurt.
I think for games
it is a bit complicated because you have to have people playing them and a whole bunch of
Isn't that
stuff,
a bit like having the requirement to have a rating on every single YouTube video or something like that? Isn't that what we're talking about? It's a bit crazy, isn't it?
There's a bit of discrepancy between when each game has to be, you know, classified and when each game doesn't have to be classified. So there was rumours today about some amendments coming to make it all a bit more unified.
Okay.
So hopefully that means we'd get an Xbox Indie Arcade. I would very much like to have one of those, but we'll see. It's much of a muchness there.
And of course, Xbox could just host it overseas and not have to comply with Australian law, couldn't they?
I'm not 100% on that, actually.
Like Apple do.
Yeah, they probably could, but I'm just not 100% on the legalities.
And then it would just be a requirement that you don't, as an Australian using it, that you don't import anything
that gets complicated with servers and downloading and
It's all a bit of a minefield, isn't it?
It is.
Well, your mate Greg Smith, who's the Attorney General.
My mate Greg Smith of
New South Wales.
No, he's not my mate.
Isn't he? Okay.
No, but yes.
Your acquaintance, Greg Smith. Smith by name, Smith by nature.
By the sounds.
Basically, the concerns that were raised at the time of all the shenanigans of the R18+, have basically been put to the New South Wales Cabinet, and they've agreed in principle to go ahead with it, because New South Wales was the only state, really, that was...
dragging its feet.
Yeah, giving it all grief, really, wasn't it?
Mm.
So
he said he couldn't vote because he hadn't sort of researched enough.
Yeah. Well, apparently Mr. Smith has done a bit of research and he's agreed
in principle to
actually work in cooperatively with other attorney generals.
That's good.
To actually
attorneys general.
Attorneys
Thank
general.
Thank you, Lena.
The collective noun of attorneys general.
Attorney Yes. Well,
Andrew.
Sorry.
Attorneys
He's cringing
general,
again.
Courts Marshal, Surgeons General.
Yeah.
It's very annoying. So the firemen have been really good with picking up ex-THQ employees, and that's very nice of them to do that. And it's also there's also seems to be a big shift in where the game studios and the studio system in game development in Australia is going to last very much longer. Whether it's
is that because of the dollar or because of the fact that it's cheaper offshore or because it's more economical to do it in large groups of collective noun people overseas?
The dollar would have something to do with it. The fact that we're so remote would have a lot to do with it.
Oh, but most technically we're connected.
Yeah, but all publishers are mainly overseas. We don't have any massive...
So we're segregated. We're ostracized.
We're very far away from the UK and Europe and the US.
I sort of like that.
And
have you watched the telly
until
lately?
People start losing their jobs.
Well,
But yeah, so it's
no
it's,
need for
it's
it.
It's going to be a bit more, I think, outsourcing and a bit more freelancing and a bit more indie studios coming up. So it really does feel like it's in a state of flux at the moment.
Warlock on our chat says Australia charges $1,000 for ratings, and the amount of units you have to sell to make up that is astronomical.
Yeah, it's pretty insane.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. I think there is hope. There is a definitely state of flux going on with how games are going from a technological industry to a creative one now. We're seeing more games as art type things popping up. And I think that change and the whole transmedia thing is going to start to change the whole industry, and we'll see how that affects like the way that studios are set up and whether they exist or not.
Talented people, though, are talented people, and you would think that regardless of what the structure is, that those people, and we know we've got a lot of them in Australia, really, really top-notch creative people, really top-notch technical people, really top-notch programmers, really top-notch artists.
Mm-hmm. Composers.
Designers.
Composers and designers, all those things.
3D modellers. A lot of things.
They're not going to be out of work for a long time, are they?
Hopefully not. Hopefully not. Or they'll all move to Vancouver.
Well, that's
either one.
Could be warmer there.
It is right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting to see how the industry is going to go. The Free Play Independent Games Festival is on this weekend as well, of which I am an associate producer and very excited about. There's the last talk on the Sunday is called the next 12 months. The last panel on the Sunday. So I think that I'm really really excited to listen to it to see where industry experts think the next 12 months is going to go.
So who's this aimed at? Is this something the general public go along to? Or
you can if you're interested in the making of games more than the playing of them. But there is something in there for games players as well. The theme this year is called
Handmade. So it's mainly an industry thing though, is it?
A little bit, yeah.
A bit of a trade show.
A little bit. Not really.
Junket.
It's
freebies, show bags.
No, none of that. It's more for people who are interested in how games are made and the creative process behind it and the technical processes as well.
It'd be very interesting doing a storyboard or a timeline, I guess, from concept all the way through to the final replication of a game. There must be so much in it that people just don't understand or are aware of.
And how many people are involved and how much money's involved and how many deadlines there are and how strict they are. And yeah, it's a real eye-opener. But I'll be on a panel as well.
What, another one?
On Sunday, yeah. I'll be on a panel at Free Play. And I'm running a lemon jousting tournament on Thursday as part of the Playful program as well.
A lemon jousting? Do you throw lemons at people?
Or do you have to try and
spike them with something?
Everyone has two wooden spoons and a lemon.
I'm not going to regret asking this, Graham.
No, it's the most fun game in the world. It's a street game, so it's a game in the real space, in the physical space. And you've got two wooden spoons and a lemon. And the aim is to get other people to dislodge their lemons by jousting at them with your non-lemony wooden spoon. So you've got to protect your lemon, make sure it doesn't fall to the ground while dislodging other people's lemons. So it's so much fun. Drop your lemon 3 times and you're out. Hilarity ensues.
I'm glad I asked what lemon jousting was all about. Now I know.
It's fun.
So does that wrap up our week in computer gaming this week?
Yeah, the industry's changing, but it's going to all end up okay, and Free Play is going to be great, and I'll update you on it next week when it's all finished.
Fantastic.
Mm.
Back after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody.
Because you don't believe man walked on the moon, did you?
No, it was all done on the soundstage.
Shut up, Dr. Ron. It's not.
look, approve an R18 rating, or we're going to reform the way we do everything.
The road is now 2.4 metres from where the map says the road is.
That's flagpole for you.
Oh, Andrew.
Heathen.
So Mr. Zuckerberg is certainly...
Nonsense.
Entertaining.
I very much enjoy it. I think it's very funny.
Informative.
It used to be cool.
Independent.
I gave up Warcraft for you, Lena. What else do you want me to do? You're going to bring me to my knees.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
On air and on the internet, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Yeah!
Sorry, we're still speechless here. That was Warlock, one of our listeners.
It's good.
He's on the chat. You can go and commend him for that. Anyway, welcome back. This is Tech Talk Radio. Just before we get on to all the good things, the Oddspot gadget and the website of the week, if you're wondering where Dr. Ron is, he's somewhere at an airport chasing aeroplanes, believing in the fact that he's controlling them and living the dream, might I ask. You know, he's a bit of a transport buff. He likes trains, planes, and automobiles. So given an opportunity to be out in the suburbs and fresh airs playing with computers and watching aeroplanes, good luck to him. Don't you think?
Yeah.
It's a bit of a worry if he thinks he can control them, though.
I know. Maybe that was just a bit of pulling our leg.
Next, I'll start talking to him.
Yes. Voices in your mind. Then they come along and put jackets on you and stuff like that.
Mm.
Optus posted a 5% fall in the first quarter of this year, according to those in the know. This press release that I have here in front of me.
5% fall in profits?
First quarter profits, describing it, the company as resilient amid intense competition. And I must admit, it is fairly intense competition because Telstra certainly bitten back a lot of customers, I would say, and they've got them from Optus and Vodafone. And you've got to bear in mind that Optus is a fairly sold network. Like, what's that?
What are you trying to say, Andrew?
Amasim. Remember them? They're an Optus resold. Woolies. You go into Woolies and buy a sim these days, and that's Optus.
What you're saying is a lot of people who are on sort of these smaller networks are actually really on Optus underneath.
Yeah, they are. They are. And Optus has been a fairly congested network based on internet speeds and things like that. So, you know, despite that they've weathered the storm quite well in a lot of respects if they've only had a 5% fall. You look at Vodafone that lost thousands upon thousands of customers in the last little bit due to their network going pear-shaped and also the lack of communication between their management and their customers. So be interesting to see what happens. But anyway, that's Optus's goings-on. Let's talk about Microsoft briefly. My machine has gone berserk doing patches during the course of the week. 22 of them, apparently.
Ouch.
Oh, yes.
Graham, do you know much about them? Because it's like they seem to be every 5 minutes these days, especially when you're on a network, because it replicates out through other clients from the server and stuff like that.
Yeah, they're not every 5 minutes. This is the normal Patch Tuesday bunch for the month.
Really?
Gosh. So
every time I've gone up
the last few days, yeah.
I've shut a computer off. It's got a little red arrow. Please restart me.
Mm.
A green arrow. No, what yellow arrow thingy? You know, the yellow.
Depends on which version of Windows you're using.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't know that.
It's just the normal round of updates. I think part of the issue is that sometimes you have updates that depend on other updates. So sometimes it might load some, and then it'll discover that after it's loaded those, that there's a couple of others it needs to do. So sometimes you might see it need to restart twice. Your best bet is to leave your computers on overnight and set them to load updates at 3 a.m. and restart if necessary.
Doesn't happen at my house. Well, nothing gets left on overnight.
The PowerPoints are switched off.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, turn your screen off and save a bit of, you know, make sure you turn off that laser printer that uses a lot of power. But yeah, leave the computer running overnight.
Yep.
And that way you're not going to waste half an hour in the morning loading updates and waiting for the thing to start up slowly. It will have done all that stuff overnight.
Good.
So, yeah, you can save a lot of time by doing that.
Well, Microsoft last week released 13 security bulletins, two of which were rated as critical in severity and 9 important and 2 just moderate. It advised customers to install all of the updates as soon as possible, starting with the 2 most rated critical ones, which, guess what, targeted Internet Explorer.
Yeah, well, that's normal.
Which is the weakest link between the internet or the outside world and your computer, really, isn't it?
Well, I wouldn't describe it as the weakest link, but it is the natural face. It's one of those applications, along with email, that does face the outside world. It's where you're first going to encounter things that are trying to get in from outside.
Mm.
Sorry, coughing and spluttering.
Sorry, the barking frog over there. Yeah. All right, so if you've noticed your computer, your PC in particular, going absolutely berserk, that is the reason.
More to the point, why. If you haven't noticed your computer doing all these upgrades, go and make sure that automatic updates are turned on, because otherwise you might be running the risk of being in trouble with not having the latest updates loaded.
Yes, indeed. Now, another news, Microsoft's smartphone market.
Oh.
Did you know they had one?
Well, they don't have a great deal of one, I wouldn't have thought.
No,
at the minute.
They've now dropped below 2% of market share.
Well, that doesn't surprise globally. Me because they're older. Microsoft used to probably lead this market with their, before the iPhone was in existence, with their Windows phones, with Windows CE and those sorts of operating systems on.
Yeah.
Apple have taken it all over with their iPhone product, and we're now seeing Android come back into that. Microsoft have entered that market with their Windows Phone 7, but they're still ramping up getting that out to consumers and getting it marketed. And, of course, their big arrangement with Nokia, who are going to drop their previous interface in favour of using Windows Phone 7.
Symbian stuff.
Hasn't clicked in yet, so we're not yet seeing those phones come through onto the market. When we do, expect that number to reverse and start climbing again.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I guess this is a survey according to Gartner. They do a lot of surveys. In the second quarter of 2011, which we've just wrapped up just recently.
Yep.
The biggest selling units in those particular quarter was Android with 46 million. Let me get my units right here. Quite a lot, 43% of the market share. I think it's 46 point something million units there. I've got to just check my numbers here, but it's just that sort of equivalent. Their tables are fairly oblique at times. Let me tell you, Symbian came in at 23. iOS came in at 19 or near enough 20 if you round up. RIM, which is BlackBerry, came in at 12, and that rounds up the top four. Then there's something which I've never heard of before called Barter. Have you heard of Barter? I should Google it and find out what Barter is about.
How do you spell it?
Barter operating, BADA, which had two, and they're above Microsoft, which came in at 1.7. So, yes, lots of, I guess all up, 107 is the total of, I think it's million, but yes, I'm not sure.
Actually,
there it is. They've omitted the thousands. They're in thousands of units. So if you look at 46,000 units,
okay,
do the maths.
I hate maths.
Barter's a Korean word, and it's being used as the name for a mobile operating system developed by Samsung.
Okay. So Samsung's come into the race.
So, yeah. So obviously, they want to run Barter on the Samsung tablets and smartphones and whatever.
There you go. Warlock said Barter is a Samsung OS just at the same time you looked it up.
There you go.
Thank you, Warlock. So, yes, you're looking at Android still well and truly double the Symbian system, but it's still impressive to see that Symbian is still shipping at such a large quantity compared to, iOS. Well, I'm wondering if iOS is going to flatten out. They've had amazing growth in the last few quarters, but now with the new iPhone coming out, I wonder if that's going to just give it a big spike as well.
Probably.
So, yeah. Anyway, so that's what's going on with Microsoft. Not doing too flash in the phone world.
But as I say, I think that's a temporary thing. I think when their product starts coming out on Nokia phones, the combination of Nokia and Microsoft is going to be attractive to businesses, particularly if they're running all Microsoft servers and software in-house. There's going to be a potential there for the cross-selling and to have the Microsoft operating system on the phone be preferred. Not that the iPhones have any trouble interacting with Exchange. It works really well, but you might just find that there's a few advantages there for Microsoft.
Yeah. Sorry, Lena, you're still not...
Sorry. I'm always sick.
Dear.
Sleeping and eating are things that we should do.
Yeah, they are.
Mm.
Yeah, you should do it amongst tweets. Come in handy.
Hey, I've been pretty good.
The High Court granted the film industry appeal in the iiNet trial. So basically, remember how the film industry was after costs a bit?
Yep.
Well, I think they've got their bit of costs. The High Court has granted Hollywood Studios special leave to appeal a long-running copyright battle against iiNet, which is the number two service provider at the moment. I think, ahead of Telstra, which is number one, biggest one.
Yeah, this is where the film industry is trying to blame the internet service provider for users downloading copyright content over the network, which, of course, got completely and utterly ridiculed at a lower level court, but they're now taking it to the higher level court. So,
what we call safe harbor, isn't it? You can't be, don't shoot the messenger, because he doesn't know what the message is.
That's the general concept, yeah. So the same thing that you can't, if someone commits a crime by communicating over a telephone, you can't blame Telstra for it.
No. No, you can't. Especially if you ring up and do nasty things and extort people. It's not Telstra's fault, is it?
That's right.
Or even if you say there's something on a bus, which there shouldn't be. Yeah, all those sort of things. It's not the phone company's problem. The consortium of 34 studios represented by the Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft, otherwise known as AFACT, was required to serve a notice of appeal to the court and iNet within the 14 days. Anyway, so they got the last little bit.
Appeal. Yep, and it's probably, yep, although it's a ridiculous case and there really shouldn't be any liability on iiNet's part here, it probably is good that it's going all the way to the High Court, because that way the decision
done
is...
done and dusted, goes no further.
Yeah, it can serve as precedent to, effectively make law for the future.
Yep.
All right. Now, the other thing which is also interesting this week is, you know, we got the guarantee for telephone companies, you know, connect your phone within a certain period of time and all that sort of stuff. And if they don't, then they have to make amends, so to speak. Well, large ISPs are about to face a $2 million penalty over service guarantees. Basically, large service providers could face fines if they do not meet performance benchmarks for customer connections, fault repairs, and appointments. And this all starts from October the 1st. Is this a good idea, Graham, for ISPs to be accountable in some form of pecuniary interest, I guess, to subscribers?
Yeah, probably.
As opposed to a telephone system, because it's not really essential, is it?
Well, more and more it is getting to be an essential service, particularly to businesses. If you have trouble with your internet connection, you can't get your connection put on in time, or your connection fails and you can't get someone to come and fix it, that can cripple a business.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I guess so,
yeah. All right, well, apparently...
Well, how would your business fare if your internet connection didn't work for 6 weeks?
Oh, look, there'd be a revolution. Six weeks would be a revolution.
Yeah. I mean, if your internet connection was down for...
blood on the streets.
There'd be blood on the streets at your business if it was down for 6 hours.
Oh, yeah, I'd just blame it off at Brian with doing what Brian does on the internet from time to time. The customer service guarantee timeframe state that providers establish a customer connection in between 2 and 15 days and repair a fault up to 4 days after it was reported, depending on the location and obviously its complexity. Affected customers could claim up to $48.40 a day, depending on the length of waiting period and type of complaint. $48, let's round it. Let's be nice here. Let's round it to $50. That's a whole week is worth $250. That's probably about what you pay for a relatively good internet service connection with an SLA, a service level agreement, to a degree, wouldn't it? How hard can it be to fix a problem? I guess it applies to some of the smaller guys, but obviously the bigger guys as well.
Well, it just means they've got to get their act together and be able to liaise with the other companies that are involved, like Telstra and so on, in providing ADSL lines.
Mm.
They've just got to, make sure they've got all their procedures in place.
And finally, before we go to the Oddspot Gadget and website of the week, did you know that the first mobile phone call made in Australia was over 30 years ago?
30 years ago.
Yeah, wow. Lena wasn't even here for that.
I wasn't.
No.
Never known a world without mobile phones.
Never.
There you go.
Never. 30 years ago, the bricks came out onto the market. 700 mega the best. Then it moved, didn't it? Then it went to GSM after that. I've got a list here. I probably shouldn't go on too much about it. In 1981, no one had heard of texting.
No.
Oh, no, heaven forbid. So, and then mobile internet kicked in also in 1981. The first, it must have been Edge back then. It's what a lot of Vodafone customers are still using today.
It took a while to really grab on though, didn't it?
What, SMS?
Yeah.
You reckon? Yes.
Well, from 1981 to when I actually bought my first phone and didn't even have texting on it when I was 16, I wasn't even born in 1981. I was born in 1985.
I don't say that on the 16. Radio.
I'm young enough to not care about whether people know how old I am, you see. Yeah, 16 was when I got my Nokia 5110, and it couldn't even text. So, you know.
Okay.
It's a long time.
Fair enough. It is one of the cheapest forms of communications from the phone company's point of view because it uses the least amount of bandwidth and data on their network. But finally, before we do disappear off into the place where we go to the odd spot and gadget, the cost of mobile telecommunications. In 1981, it cost $4,995 plus a $350 installation fee to purchase a mobile phone.
Ouch.
Yep. $5,000.
Yeah.
And a bit.
Only the rich people had them.
Oh, absolutely. And then there were people like us with receivers who listened into the rich people who had them. Because yes. It was all unencrypted back then, wasn't it?
Yes.
Ew.
Do you remember Jeff Kennett?
Yes.
I've got that audio somewhere.
Have you?
I do.
I wouldn't be admitting to that.
No. Why wouldn't you admit to that? I was working for a media outlet and I said, oh, one day that might come in handy. yes, $5,000 plus 30 years ago. Whereas today, $35. Hasn't it come down in price?
Really has.
You wonder if the phone calls have actually changed in price. I don't think they have they?
You're still, I don't know.
Still charging
I think come down astronomically to, as well.
Because then we had caps come in. Oh, they were awful. Subsidised handsets. Oh, then we had all the ACCC freeness and stuff like that.
I can remember the days when you wouldn't use your mobile phone. You'd go to great lengths to find a landline phone to make the phone call.
And what was the point of having a mobile phone?
But because the mobile phone was so expensive, you only use it when you really needed it to be mobile. And now we just use it all the time without thinking.
Mine was in the bottom of my school bag for emergencies.
Was it?
Mm. And so mum could call me.
Not for show and tell.
Mum could call me and find out exactly where I was at any given moment.
Look what the young girls and boys of today do with their mobile phones. Yeah. Oh, they get themselves into a lot of trouble. Mm. And so might we if we don't do this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
You've got to remember that compression is not your friend.
Is it for credit cards only, or is it FBOS as well?
Steve Wozniak, the
traitor. I'm down to 4 cables again, not 14,000.
Go away.
Click here to upgrade.
If you put your entire life online, you get what you deserve in some ways.
Optus have said sorry, and so say all of us. Fantastic.
This
all right.
This is why we can't have nice things.
This is why you can't have nice things.
Entertaining, informative, independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
The gadget this week is D-Link's Boxy Box.
Yes. I like one. I want one of these.
Streaming media player with really great features for streaming content over the internet. It'll show you content from ABC's iView, 7's Plus 7, and a whole swag of other online catch-up TV services.
And it has a really nice user interface, GUI. We've used the acronym before this evening.
Yep. Graphical user interface is apparently quite nice, although the box itself is a very odd shape and won't fit in your lounge room all that well.
It is. Imagine if you've got a box and you cut it on a diagonal and it just looks like a bit of it's missing.
According to a review I've read by Adam Turner himself, it's got a really nice remote control comes with it.
Yeah, it's QWERTY.
Tech Talk Zone.
Hey?
Tech Talk's own Adam Turner. That's correct.
Correct, yes.
Yep, it's got HDMI output, so it'll do high definition straight to your big plasma screen or LCD screen or whatever you've got.
Wireless, as well as cabled internet.
Wireless and cabled internet. It's got USB ports, so you can plug in your media. It'll play stuff off your internet, off your network, off your PCs or off USB cards, all those downloaded files. as well as playing stuff off the internet. It's a really nice little box. It's probably pushing at the WDTV as being another great option as being a media player for in your lounge room.
Correct, and you'll pick them up in shops from about $255.
$299 they're listed at. But
don't buy it at that. Better.
Get them at better than that, and if you want to hear a little bit more about it, go back to last week's show and have a listen to The View from the Couch from Adam Turner. He talked all about it.
We can go straight to his page on the Tech Talk Radio website and listen straight from The View from the Couch.
There you go.
Which is good. But now... I was going to say, if you want to hear more about the Boxy Box, thinking, but it's Australia. What can you see on pay TV and stuff like that in Australia or off the internet? Can I tell you?
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Now, Adam Turner tipped me off to this website in his
rant the other week, and it's a website called unblock-us.com.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I read about this, yeah.
Now, I'm a convert. I tried this out during the week. I have paid the money and I'm there. Basically, what this does, if you've got a media server like a Boxy Box or even a WDTV Live, one of these media streaming devices, in your living room, you can, through this organization, Unblock Us, they will set you up so that you can get any media from virtually any particular source anywhere in the world in real time. Now, what means... is it means Hulu's available to you. It means that if you want, there's even ways of watching Netflix, which is the world's biggest video online library sort of thing.
But Andrew, let me play devil's advocate here.
Off you go.
Setting up that stuff, it's always so complicated with VPNs and proxy servers, and you've got to get all the settings right, and it's really complicated to set up, isn't it?
It used to be. This makes it very easy. And there's a simple, there's a little program on their website which you can run, which will set up your machine for you. Or if you want, you can do the little trick manually, which is entering what we call the DNS on your computer or your media server. You just change it to theirs and it just works. Very easy to do.
So no, you've only got to change one setting, the DNS setting.
Yep.
And it just works.
And that's it.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's people who've thought through how to do it.
And one of the great internet radio services, which I love, is Pandora. Now, we've had... Mr. Westergren on our program before.
Yeah, years and years ago, we used to be able to listen to Pandora in Australia, and then they turned it off and wouldn't let us.
That's right. And that was due to issues of, I guess,
rights. They didn't have the rights outside of America.
Anyway, I went back and revisited my favourite Pandora radio station, which I haven't heard for many, many moons. I've missed Pandora. It's good to have it in the office. It's just beautiful. So, a big convert of this. Also, if you're into, say, the NBA, the basketball in America... You can't normally watch that, whereas they stream it online over there all the time. You can go and watch it now through sites like this. So there you go. That's the Tech Talk Radio.
Now, hang on. Before you move on, how much does it cost?
Didn't I say it's going to cost you $5 a month?
$5 a month.
Now, compare that to your Foxtel, buddy.
Yeah, that's not going to break the bank, is it? And you get a trial period at the start as well,
don't
you?
Yeah, go and play with it. 7-day trial. So if you don't believe how easy it is, just go and have a bit of a play.
Fantastic.
But if that's what you want to do, and I reckon it is, because I'm a convert, I'm sold. Cheapest pay TV I've ever had. But this is where the world's going. This is, what's going to happen. It's all going to be on demand. Look at Fetch TV on iiNet. Look at all the Big Pond TV.
Yep. No borders.
Trying to do it.
No borders on the internet.
Yep.
Well, they're trying, we're going to knock it down.
That's
anyway,
right.
Anyway, that's the Tech Talk Radio website of the week, which is unblockus.com.
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
Now, here's another one which I had. I've been talking about this on ABC Radio. I got swamped by good apps the other day. This is one for an Android, and it's...
That's a nice problem to have, isn't it?
It is good.
Swamped by good apps.
It is. Lookout is an Android app, which basically, I was touting. It does a lot of other things, but the one I'm going to tout for it at the moment is if you ever lost your Droid and you leave it somewhere... This is a free app, and you can download it on any Android device.
We've had a couple of these phone finder apps, haven't we?
Yeah, this is a phone finder app of different caliber, because not only does it pinpoint it on a map, on a Google map for you to find, all part of the free service, you can also make it turn into a siren.
Oh, no.
So if it's lost behind the couch, falling out of your back pocket in the car or underneath the car seat, you log on to the phone via the internet, you just log on to it, and you go, make a noise. And you can hear this things like 1,000 ambulances heading towards you online or out of the speaker thing.
Cool.
So it's really good. So a really useful app, which I thought...
Lookout does a bit more than that. It also does antivirus and backup and stuff as well, but...
It does. I haven't found a great use for that just yet, but I'm sure there will be as time comes by. Mm. So there you go. That's the Tech Talk Radio app of the week, which is called Lookout for Android only.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bon.
You can't handle the truth.
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Japanese inventors have created fluffy cat's ears for humans that read their brainwaves.
Yep.
It's exactly what you had in mind for Christmas, Graham. The cute meets high-tech headwear detects when the wearer is concentrating and the ears perk up like an alert feline. And when they relax, the ears lay flat against the head. Some might say it's perfect.
Could you imagine
for Christmas?
Could you imagine the rollout in the market in the workplace? Or are those of you slacking off, your ears are down.
I remember a few years ago when everyone was wearing bunny ears.
Well, you know when cats get really angry, they point their ears backwards?
Yes.
Does it do that as well?
I don't know. Maybe we should get a pair.
Why is my wife annoyed? Her ears are pointing backwards. Mm. It could be very handy for those who can't communicate properly.
It's just broken again.
My wife needs attention. Her ears are pointing backwards.
Yeah, good. Mm. And that is the show for the week. We'll be back same time next week. Maybe Dr. Ron will find his way back from the airport. You never know. Thank you, linesman. Thank you, ball boys. Until then, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.